2 minute meditation.
And then Tony Tagg, would you say a prayer after the meditation? So we're going to roll into the second step. Our goal is to cover the second step and the third step in this session. So I want to read something, and I'm going to read some pages out of We Agnostics, and I'm going to have a discussion and share some experience. There's a basket of fresh bread on your head, yet you go door to door asking for crusts. Knock on the inner door, no other door. Sloshing knee-deep in clear stream water, you keep wanting a drink from other people's water bags. Water is everywhere around you, but you see only barriers that keep you from the water. A horse is moving beneath the rider's thighs, yet the rider still asks, "Where's my horse?" Right there under you. Yes, this is a horse, but where is the horse? Can't you see? Yes, I can see, but whoever saw such a horse? Mad with thirst, he cannot drink from the stream running so close by his face. He's like a pearl on the deep bottom, wondering inside the shell, where is the ocean? His mental questionings form the barrier. His physical eyesight bandages his knowing. Self-consciousness plugs his ears. Stay bewildered in God and only that. In the last analysis is where and when and how we find God, but unfortunately the last place we ever look is deep down within ourselves. We'll go looking for God in everything out there. In every place, But it's only when we reach that genuine surrender or turning point are we driven to look deep down within ourselves to find this fundamental idea of God and tap the unsuspecting inner resource that the big book talks about. So the second step has taken on new meaning for me over the years. I heard an old timer when I was in early recovery, and this has stuck with me ever since. I probably heard this close to 10 years ago. He'd been sober at that time for 43 years. And he said that he has spent the majority of 43 years somewhere between coming to believe and making a decision. And if you start to reflect on your life, if you've been around for a minute, we do spend a lot of our time coming to believe and making decisions. And which would be implied that we spend a lot of times between steps 2 and 3, somewhere in there. I think that would hold true from my experience. Because once you get on this path and you start investigating where religious people are right and you make use of what they offer and you get curious and excited, your conception of God will change as your moral development progresses. Right? As your character begins to change, you're going to find your concept of God may start to morph as well. And the dogma and doctrine that once stunted our ideas about God start to relax. And, the fixed and rigid ideas that we grow up with that we call dogmatic, they will be a bar against inquiry and curiosity. But as our moral development begins to change, the capacity to want to look further and investigate and not just surrender to the status quo of what was taught to us and told to be truth starts to be in question. So we begin to... Let me have my own experience with this. Let me relax some of these rigid and fixed ideas I have. Let me investigate. And if I find them to be true, then I'll move forward from that point with them. But lo and behold, I may find some of these are not true. And so we go through this human development process where if we look back into our experience, you're going to see that in addiction we had this self-survival mode. And I love the way I've got my notes here. It says power driven and instinctive and unthinking behavior. I heard it put that way. And that's what most of my life was before somebody introduced me to this 12-step process as being a design for living that really works. Somewhere along the way near the tail end of my addiction, it morphed into this blaming sense of self. At times, I would tend to have a conscience. Like I knew I was doing something that wasn't okay with me. I grew up with a moral compass that was pretty decent. I was taught right from wrong. And so there was this consciousness that began to develop. But once I was introduced to the 12 steps and really taken into a fourth and fifth step and saw how my troubles were all of my own making, then the capacity to really see how I had affected people began to increase exponentially. And so I developed a conscience. And then you stay on this path, and you continue to make your amends, and you continue to develop this practice of watching yourself and taking an inventory of yourself as you interact with people, and you investigate prayer and meditation, and the constant thought of others and how you may help meet their needs is still the driving force in your life, and you're sacrificing your personal time to sponsor people, you enter this developmental phase of inspired sense of self. So you go from a survival mode, you develop a conscience, and then it goes into this inspired sense of self. And you become open to intuition and creative exploration. And that, to me, was all happened in the 10th and 11th step. But it had to start with coming to believe. It all started back here with this coming to believe and making a decision. And now I believe I reside in this area that I've studied about called tranquility. The confidence of one's own insight. Regardless if I make a mistake or not, I'm well aware the mistake was what was supposed to happen. I don't mind negative outcomes in my life. I'm not living to avoid them. I understand how a struggle refines and hones and polishes my character. I understand that life goes through a series of flips from anguish and despair to love and joy. I think sometimes we got sold a bill of goods about this whole happy, joyous, and free, because we immediately, I think for a lot of people, I'll speak for myself. For many years, I thought if I was not happy, joyous, and free, there was something wrong with me. I had done something wrong. Not true. The human existence requires that you not only experience happiness, joy, and freedom, that you experience darkness and anguish and wrath and mercy and grace, all of it. All of these beautiful words that have been given to us by God. And so there's that tranquil phase of development where you are confident that you're going to be okay regardless of what the outcomes are, following your own insight at times. That doesn't mean Tarek says do not seek counsel. That's not what I'm saying. But the thing is, my first and foremost counsel is my relationship with God. God reliance. And then there's this ultimate stage called self-actualization, where you live a life where you become a complete human, and every time you look in someone's eyes, you see God staring at you. You begin to ask yourself, what is it that's peering out from behind your eyes? Is it the same thing that's peering out from behind my eyes, looking at what's peering out from behind your eyes? And the human connection goes to the next level. These are possible stages of development. For me, where it all started was coming to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. That's the short form of that step. It's got two parts to it. Let's go to page 47. So before you can take a first step, you got to be convinced of a... Before you can take a second step, you have to be convinced of the first step. And so what convinces you is your experience with alcohol and or drugs. When you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely, or when drinking or using, you have little control over the amount, you're probably alcoholic and or addict. And if you're suffering from the illness I just described, you're suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. The question is, do I believe the spiritual experience is my only solution? There's the trap door. The word only. If you want out, there it is. Maybe you believe there's another solution. So go investigate. Because living life on a spiritual basis or dying the addict, alcoholic death are not easy alternatives to face. We get that. So if there is a third option, please go burn it to the ground and come back. We'll be here.
If you make it back. Just saying.
Page 47. I need to ask myself one short question. Do I now believe, or am I even willing to believe, that there is a power greater than myself? Absolutely. Well, how do you go through the steps when you're 11 years sober with that question? You can't. You have to change the question. Do I now believe, or am I willing to believe, that at 10 years and 7 months, that God can change Tarek again? He can recreate me again. He can change me again. He can transform me again. He can take me to degrees and dimensions of love and existence and power and all of it that I don't have access to, that I have no experience with. Can we go further? That's how I work the steps at 10 and a half years. All right? And I'm sure most of you may have heard this before, but I know and understand and comprehend way less about God now than I did when I was 2 and 3 years clean and sober. 2 and 3 years clean and sober, I was in a state of trying to figure God out. And now I have found something that really works for me that I do outside of the steps, but it's very open and ambiguous at times and very contradictory at times. And I'm okay with that, because there's, through confusion and ambiguity and contradiction, it leaves me somewhat bewildered and curious, which is sort of exciting for me. I think a lot of us get to this place where it just becomes bland and it becomes boring, and then the decisions that go with coming to believe just are not entertained anymore, and then we start to move backwards. So one of my goals for the weekend is to sort of excite you about investigating for yourself, to develop some curiosity. Just because you grew up and someone told you something does not mean it's the truth. Go find out for yourself. And if you find that it works for you, which is the only true morality that we have in Alcoholics Anonymous or Cocaine Anonymous, if it works, keep doing it. If it's not working, you may want to try something new. That's the only morality, truly. So, as soon as a man can say that he does believe or he's willing to believe, we emphatically assure him that he's on his way. So if you answer this question with, yes, I do believe, or I'm even willing to believe that this worked for you and it could possibly work for me, you are not an atheist. Done. That is removed from the equation. An atheist is someone who believes they can prove the non-existence of God. That's what an atheist is. And if you answer that question with, yes, I'm willing, or yes, I do believe, let's move forward, we can do some work. You're not an atheist. Now, here's the deal. If you've been given the surrender in the first step, this won't even be a debate for you. You're not even going to care what God looks like. You're just... The best conception of God I've ever had a sponsee come up with is two words. Two-word conceptions. I have sponsees come to me with some really elaborate second-step conceptions of God. This guy had two words. God is. In almost 10 years of sponsorship, the best one. The best one. God is. All right, so we've all discovered, if we answer that question with the affirmative, that we're not atheists. So then the big book goes on to... I love how this book... It is a beautiful... I know you guys just went through this chapter last weekend, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it. But it's my favorite chapter in the book. Because it shows you how you always have had the capacity to worship and have faith. You've worshipped your thinking. And then it talks about those first few months of a relationship, right? How much did that have to do with reason at all? It was just running on faith and worship, right? We've worshipped the sun, the flower, and then we've always had the capacity to have faith in other people and friends. And so on some level, we've been living by faith and very little the entire time. So if you have the capacity to have faith and worship, now we're just asking you to have faith and worship something else, which is just a higher power that you cannot see. But I after being around for a while, I can tell you I can see it. That you can't touch it, I can tell you can touch it. You can't taste it, I'm going to tell you can taste it. All the senses can be accessed through this power. Don't just take it on my word, though. Go find out for yourself. You know, the 12 steps are spiritual kindergarten, I'll tell you that. But they're divinely inspired and they're beautiful. They're living and they're breathing and they move and they're fluid on their own. But this idea of spirituality and seeking and living a spiritual path is since the beginning of time, probably. There's a lot of cool stuff that's written about it. Let's turn to page 47. When therefore we speak to you of God, we mean your own conception of God. This applies too to other spiritual expressions which you find in this book. Do not let any prejudice or preconceived judgment or notions you may have against spiritual terms deter you from honestly asking yourself what they mean to you. This is a very common exercise that I give sponsees. I want you to go through this chapter, and every time you see a spiritual term like the realm of the spirit, living life on a spiritual basis, spirit of the universe, creative intelligence, the broad highway, I want you to write that down and then ask yourself, what does this mean to me? So we can begin to have a personal experience with the terms in this chapter. At the start, this is all you need to commence spiritual growth, to affect your first conscious relation with God as you understand Him. Afterward, we will find ourselves accepting many things which then seemed entirely out of reach. That was growth, but if we wished to grow, we had to begin somewhere. So we used our conception however limited it was. You have to come to believe into something, no matter how inadequate it is. You just need a starting place. From there, we can commence to have spiritual growth. I'm convinced that you don't even have to have a conception of God for the power of God to start working in your life. Think about it. We have two miracles here. Two miracles happen to us. The first miracle is separation. That miracle has to happen, and it has to happen quickly. Otherwise, there'd be no recovery to talk about. Period. The second miracle is returning sanity. Returning sanity. That's a very slow and evolving process. And the sanity for me in the beginning years was just, I was no longer in a position to try the desperate experiment of the first drink or drug. No matter what my internal or external conditions were, for whatever reason, for the past 10 years and 7 months, I've never had a desire to put a mood mind altering substance in my body. That's sane, based on my track record prior to that. Now my sanity is a little bit different. Now sanity says to me, whatever happens in your life, good or bad, God's involved in all of it, and I'm okay with it. That's my sanity today. It's the only constant that is that everything is going to change. That's it. One of the things, though, that has been very constant is that desire to not put a mood and mind-altering substance in my body. There are other things in recovery that are very marginal. Marginal means they change, and you can't hang your hat on them. They don't mean you're in a recovered state. Number one being serenity. But that's our goal, you know. I'm not a big fan of the serenity prayer. People come in here and they just practice this concept of serenity, and they forget to work the steps. It's like those people that come into the rooms and they practice the promises and they wait for the steps to come true. Right? I've watched it long enough. Stick around and be observant and watch what people do. The majority in AA and CA get high and drink. The majority. Is that a majority you want to be a part of? Serenity, can't hang your hat on it because your emotions are going to come and go. What Brandon read, the confession of shortcomings, the self-searching, and the leveling of our pride. That does not imply the word serene to me in any of that, but that's what is required for a spiritual experience. So perhaps maybe serenity has nothing to do with the spiritual experience? Huh, interesting. The second is health. We think if we become healthy, we're automatically in recovery. I've put weight back on, or I've dropped some weight, I'm chiseled, I got a six-pack, I've got all this stuff going on, I look good in the mirror, I'm pumped, I do those affirmations in the mirror, and I'm gonna create this world the way I want it, I'm going to focus on what I want. Failure is unacceptable. That's not something you can hang your hat on. Health is not something you can hang your hat on, because I've watched people come in and not get healthy and they still live a recovered state. I've watched some people get unhealthy in recovery and they still thought of God in a lot of, if not everything that they do. So health cannot be something that is equated to recovery. It's not basic. It's marginal. All right. And then the other one is what we talk about a lot is the money. Some people come in here, they were millionaires, and they never get their money back, but they get a wonderful life. Some people do get their money back. Some people go from never having money to getting money. But I know for me, in those 3 years where I bounced in and out, getting a job and a steady paycheck and get a little bit of money in my pocket meant I was doing well. But I was never doing well. Marginal changes. You can't trust it. What you can trust is sanity. If you work these steps, if you come to believe that these steps can be a source of change for you, and they are the answer to your problem, you'll make a decision, you'll take some action, you'll get some results, and you'll start to develop faith. And then if you have good sponsors and teachers around you, you will continue to be willing. You not being the source of the willingness. Let me emphasize that. It's a gift as well. If you have the gift, you'll be willing. You'll make another decision because of coming to believe. You'll take some more action. You'll get some more results. And I don't know when that happens for you, but somewhere along the way, the faith becomes trust. And you enter this tranquil phase of development where you start to become comfortable in this relationship with God and what it's providing for you and the direction and the guidance that it provides. Remember, in the 10th step, we can use our will along certain lines. It's given that sanity is returned to us. That's what we're talking about in this second step. We're not talking about the insanity in the second step. We're talking about sanity. The insanity is in the first step. Sanity is in the second step. So on page 47, we need to ask ourselves but one short question. Do I now believe... Oh, I'm sorry. We're on page 53. When we become addicts and alcoholics crushed by a self-imposed crisis that we could not postpone or evade, we had to fiercely face the proposition that either God is everything or else he is nothing. God either is or he isn't. What is our choice to be? We know we're not atheists from page 47. Now we're looking at our agnosticism. Can I make a decision that God is everything? So this is a choice that's made from a place of no choice, really. Because if you want to live, and if you're willing to die the death of self and the destruction of self-centeredness that this process requires, then there's no choice here. God is everything. Maybe God is nothing. Let's move on. Okay, now I'm a guy that believes God is everything and he's nothing. Because the minute I say God is that, it's not. It's just an attribute or some version of it. But it's not it. So it can't be anything. That's just something that works for me. But in the beginning, I just said God is everything. Let's move on. And, you know, Scott, for years, you know, one of the things he used to tell me was like, you know, when you're taking a guy through the steps and he has that gift of surrender, he's going to run over you like a Mack truck to get to his second step. All right? And it's something Mark used to say. It's simple. Individuals who stop here and try to figure God out or they want to debate about the higher power are probably not surrendered, most likely. And so the rest of this process is about page 55. The rest of this book, page 55 is a wonderful page because it tells you when you're going to find God, it tells you how you're going to find God, and it tells you where you're going to find God. The great reality is deep down within us. In the last analysis, it is only there that he may be found, or she may be found. So the great reality is deep down within. That's where, when in the last analysis, the last place we'll ever look, deep down within. Well, how do we do that? Next paragraph. If Brandon and I could only clear the ground a bit this weekend, hopefully our testimony will help sweep away prejudice. That's the first thing. Enables you to think honestly. Encourages you to search diligently within yourself. Then, if you wish, you can join us on the broad highway. With this attitude, you cannot fail. The consciousness, the awareness of your belief is sure to come to you. The awareness of your belief is sure to come to you. That's what the rest of this book's about. Access to power. I think that's a good stopping place.
All right. I want to read something. One of my favorite readings of all time. For those of you who have your God all figured out. Donkey. Dismount your donkey at the summit. Some places in this world are very hard to climb and people use animals. Each person can ride only one and each animal might have a different name. The riders go up the trail in different orders and they discuss their varying opinions about their experiences. They may even have conflicting opinions. One traveler may think the trip thrilling, another may find it terrifying, and the third may find it banal. At the summit, all the travelers stand in the same place. Each of them has the same chance to view the same vistas. The donkeys are put to rest and graze. They are not needed anymore. We all travel the path of spirit. The donkeys are the various doctrines each of us embraces. What does it matter which doctrine we embrace as long as it leads us to the summit? Your donkey might be a Zen donkey. Mine might be a Tao donkey. There are Christian, Islamic, Jewish, even agnostic and 12-step donkeys. all lead to the same place. Why poke fun at others over the name of their donkey? Aren't you riding one yourself? We should put aside both the donkeys and our interim experience once we arrive at the summit. Whether we climbed in suffering or joy is immaterial. We are there. All religions have different names for the ways of getting to the holy summit. Once we reach the summit, we no longer need names, and we can experience all things directly. We broke the second and the third step up, and I'm supposed to cover the third, but there's so many things in step two that, like, I just can't help but, like, want to touch on from my own experience. So if we're looking at just Western culture in general, if I say God, is it a male or a female?
Male.
Okay. And if I'm talking about God, it probably is going to reside somewhere up in the clouds, right? And the image of whatever that God is up in the clouds, what are some of the attributes of that God?
Got a beard.
Beard. Maybe some long flowing hair. Has a nice, maybe long, flowing, light blue or some other appealing color kind of outfit. Okay. I don't know if you've ever... I've never been to the Sistine Chapel, but that image that we just described is in the Sistine Chapel, the image of God connecting with Adam. Okay? Now, if I would ask you to come up with an image of Zeus... What image do you come up with?
Same thing.
So wait a second. Where did our image of God come from? It's been passed down. It's been given us. Have we really had a new experience with it? Or are we just taking something that's been passed down through time? You know, The Hindus call it Maya. It's duality. It's an existence of me being separate from God itself, in Brandon's terms. Okay, so it means that God is this, and I am this, and that we're absolutely separate. One of the things that I find fascinating in society today is that we do this thing where we create Maya ourselves. We create this. It's either this or that. Summer of 1947, Roswell, New Mexico, they found some debris in a sheep pasture of some UFO. It was reported by the Air Force, right? The next morning, they came out and they said it was not a UFO, it was a weather balloon. What did they just do? No, they defined the incident for us. It's either a UFO... or it's a weather balloon. What is it not? Anything else? They created the argument. UFO, weather balloon. Black, white. Gray does not exist. Okay? You're either a Christian or you're going to hell. Dichotomy. No room for any air. Either you believe this, or... So, question everything, guys. And that's what Tarek was hammering on you, is that one of the great questions that I like to ask guys when they're struggling through the second step is... Have you ever been wrong about anything? Is it possible, just possible, that you're wrong about this? That's all I need. If you give me that, let's go. We can work with that. How it works, page 58. I'm not going to spend a ton of time in it, but these are very misunderstood pages that are read in most AA meetings every meeting. I can change this first paragraph of how it works multiple ways to make it look like how people actually do this. One of them would be, Tarek already touched on it earlier, is rarely have we seen a person thoroughly follow our path. Not rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. This is the way most people want to live it. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not give themselves just a tiny bit to this buffet-type step program that we have. I take what I want and I leave the rest. How many times have we heard that in meetings? Well, I hope that you see over the course of this weekend that if we leave a step out, the rest of them after that become completely worthless. They build on each other. They're all connected. Some of two flows into three, some of two flows into one, some of one bleeds into all the rest of them. But if I see them as just little, okay, check, 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 I'm completely missing the point. I sponsored a guy, we finished 11, and he said, man, I've got to get to 12. I was like, I agree, but why are you saying you have to get to 12? And he goes, I got to get to 12 so that I don't have this desire to drink anymore. I was like, wow, if you're still obsessing about that and we're on 12, we missed something somewhere. This isn't a checklist. We're not just trying to get through this. We're trying to make sure that we're thoroughly following this path. I don't believe that there are any unfortunates. I believe that there are people that just honestly are too weak to actually do this work. The most burly, toughest guys that want to argue the most, to me, are the weakest. We've got a buddy. He was Special Forces. He's kind of, I guess he's what, 5'8", 5'9", something like that, but could kill you with his pinky. He has no reason to exert himself. He knows he could kill you. That's strength. The people that want to defend their position are generally weak. If anything that Tarek and I are saying this weekend fires off something in you, look at it. It's a chink in your armor showing you where you need to work. It's causing you discomfort because that area needs to be strengthened. You can balk at some of these steps. You will get some sort of results, but it's going to be mostly related to pain. The program is the steps. But if we turn to page 60, I want to... There's... Bill, do you guys read how it works in most ERA meetings around here?
Around here,
yeah,
we do. In
yeah,
here we read what happened.
Yeah, okay, but in most AA meetings that I've ever been to, they do read how it works. And in this next little paragraph after the 12th step, they've got this hidden sentence that I'm amazed that people don't see it. Many of us exclaim, what an order, I can't go through with it. Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. So, I get so many people that are really confused at like why we're here and what we're doing. And it tells us right here, the point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. So what's the point of the first step? Grow along spiritual lines. What's the point of the second step? Grow along spiritual lines. Third step? Fourth? Fifth? All of them? What's the point of my relationships? What's the point of life? If you actually take that attitude into your day, watch. there's so many fascinating things that will happen when you actually approach your life as if the purpose of it is to grow along spiritual lines. Okay? Then we get to the ABCs. And we have A, that we were alcoholics and could not manage our own lives, our addicts. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism and drug addiction. And C, that God could and would if he were sovereign. When I take a sponsee to this point, I read those sentences, and then I read the first two words of the next paragraph that says, being convinced, oh, you're supposed to convince me. And I shut my book and say, okay. They say, what? I'm like, convince me of A, B, and C. Because if we're at this point, and you don't really believe that you're an alcoholic or an addict, and you don't really believe that you need some sort of other power, and that if you seek that power, something cool might happen to you, I'm not going to waste any more time with you. Because this is where we have to get to in order for us to really have success in the later steps. I mean, we spent 54 pages, 53 pages trying to identify alcoholism and drug addiction. And if we get here and you can't even tell me that you know what alcoholism and drug addiction are, what did the original manuscript say?
If you're not convinced on these three vital issues, you ought to reread the book or else throw it away.
I wish they would have left it. But they softened it. We have this idea that we want AA, CA, all these things to be more inviting and welcoming to people. I don't. I want it to be more inviting to people that want to get well. The problem is that we have this idea that everybody's welcome. If it's welcome to even the people that don't want to get well, they might perpetuate the sickness to others. If we invite people into our homes with the intent to harm us, why are we surprised when they harm us? Something to ponder. Are you ready? Are you willing? Do you even want to get well? What are you doing here? I mean, I know a lot of you are sitting in this room because you have to sit in this room, but what are you really doing here? Passing the time? Do you have a desire to seek anything? Or just time to make the donuts? Go back, do it again, do it again, do it again. Question yourself. So, when we're convinced, we're actually at step three. So, just what do we do and what does this mean? The first requirement is that you be convinced that the way that you've been living and running and doing your life has not been successful. Anybody in here say that their life was successful before they got here? If you're unwilling to raise your hand, then go back and keep doing that. If you're here because you had non-success, we have a solution for you. So on the way that you used to be living your life, you were either in collision with something or somebody constantly, even though your motives might be good. You might have tried to make sure that all of the situations in your life were just right so that you could reach that place of joy and happiness. When you got it just right, what happened? Was joy and happiness there? Or was it more turmoil? Page 60. Selfishness, self-centeredness. That, we think, is the root of our troubles. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity. That seems to be the one that crops up the most for me nowadays, is self-pity. I made a decision and then I don't like the results that I got and I want to mope about it. When we're doing a 10-step call, the question that Tarek asked me, I suspect, I don't, he'll ask me how things are going. I suspect the thing that he hears from me the most when I'm actually revealing myself is, I got trapped in some self-pity the other day. So that seems to be the thing that just lives on me right now, is that I do these things, I arrange my life in a certain way, God and I have worked to make this incredible plan, I get the results that I was aiming for, and then I want to complain about them. Had several weeks where I've been traveling a lot, and I've got sponsees that need to meet with me. My wife needs help with some stuff. My kids need help. I got to run them around and do all this stuff. And I got in the shower one day, and I was just like, you know, I wish I just had some time for me. I wish that I could just decompress and just have some me time. And over the course of the shower, I realized, you know, you've really wanted to be dependable, and you've really wanted people to rely on you and trust you, and you've really wanted to be important and have a lot of stuff in your life, and you've got all that, and now you're bitching about it.
Troubles of your own making.
So my troubles are absolutely of my own making, even when they're good, even when I get the results that I want. So that little self-pity of, man, I just need some time for me. It was quickly shut up. And then the next conversation I have with Tarek, I tell on myself. Yeah. I was complaining to God that I got all the things that I asked for, and I was just, you know, sent some self-pity about it. So anyway, Brandon's self-pity conversation. We step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. We get what we want and then we bitch about it. Sometimes life, the one that we picked even, hurts us seemingly without provocation. But we find invariably at some time in the past we have made a decision based on self which later put us in a position to be hurt. So, I don't know how many of you will receive this, but this is something that I had to ponder years ago, is that all my prayers being answered via my thoughts, and that everything that's happened to me in my life I absolutely asked for. And, you know, I had some trouble because I didn't think that I asked to be an alcoholic, right? But then I started asking myself, so why did I like to drink? Well, I liked to drink so that I could escape from reality and that I wouldn't be bothered by anything and I could think about nothing. And what did my alcoholism cause me to become? Nothing. We invite into our experience the things that we desire to have in our experience. Much like I said before, if I think somebody's a jerk, I'm going to find evidence to support that that person's a jerk. If you guys don't like me, you're going to find all sorts of things over the course of this weekend that will prove to you that you do not like me. How much of that really has to do with me? None. My job here is to present some information to you with the hopes that it will get you to see things differently, to desire to seek something different. If I piss you off in that process, was I successful in what I was trying to do? If Tarek and I irritate you and you relapse, I guarantee you, because I'm making this statement right now, at some point in time in your relapse, you're going to see the two of us sitting up here smiling, looking back at you. And you're going to be like, those jerks. Being in a place like this will ruin your drinking and using. It will. Because the amount of information and knowledge that you gain while you're here will impact you while you're out there. Hopefully that encourages you to stick around. I don't know. So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves, and the alcoholic and the addict are extreme examples of self-will run riot, though we usually don't think so. Okay? Then at the bottom of the page, we have this decision. This is the how and the why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. Next, we decided hereafter in the drama of life, God was going to be our director. He is the principal. We are his agent. He is the father. We are his children. Most good ideas are simple, and this concept was the keystone of a new and triumphant arch through which we passed to freedom. So what's being described there is a relationship, a dynamic between two entities. Father, child. Principal, agent. Director, actor. A lot of us have insurance with companies like State Farm. They're the principal. We deal with an agent. An agent is a person that is acting on behalf of the principal. This process allows us to become agents for God, guys. God's still the principal. We get to go out and represent. A lot of people have trouble with the father-child thing, so there's multiple definitions in here of relationships. Director, one who directs. Actor, one who acts out the direction from the director. Following intuition, you're the actor. So it's about a relationship, a connection with this thing. Not independent of, but a connection with. God's not up there, I'm not down here. We have a connection, we have a relationship. And then we have these third step promises, which are, you know, people talk about AA's promises, which are really the ninth step promises. They're promises associated with the second step, third step, fifth step. It's great promises all through this book. The third step promises, I think, are pretty awesome. When we sincerely took such a position, these relationships with God, all sorts of remarkable things happened. We had a new employer. Being all powerful, he provided what we needed. If we kept him close, conditional, and performed his work well. Established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. As we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully, as we became conscious, not just belief in, but conscious of his presence, we began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, and hereafter. We were reborn. The prayer is then the confirmation. The prayer is the confirmation that we actually want to act out the rest of the steps. To me, the third step prayer is simply a commitment that I'm going to do four through nine. That's all it is. If you haven't figured out by now, I like to get into some of the technical stuff and the semantics of things. But if you look at the end of the third step prayer, there's no amen. Where's the amen? At the end of the seventh step, right? So what if everything from the third step all the way to the end of the seventh step prayer is one continuous prayer? What if we really look at what the third step prayer, it says, God, you know, I want you to do whatever you want with me. I want you to get rid of me, and so that all my difficulties are taken away, so that when they're taken away, I will show other people of your power, your love, and your way of life. May I do this always? Have you ever pondered, how is God going to actually take me away? Take away the bondage? What I've observed happening is that I get removed by me getting beat up with me and me seeing it doesn't work anymore. and me seeing how all the relationships are strained, and me seeing how I'm selfish and self-centered and that I'm always trying to get everything I can out of anything that I do. Well, how do I do that? Well, that's what the fourth step's for. As I go in and I look at these inventories of all this information that I think is so important that when I read it to somebody else, quite often, when I'm reading to Tarek, he'll laugh at some of my inventory. Because it's that absurd. The way that I think is that absurd sometimes that the only response that can possibly happen is for the other person just to laugh and go, wow, that's awesome. And it's not a laugh or a wow out of judgment. It's a laugh or a wow out of, I get where you're coming from. I do the same stuff. So what's so interesting is that these people enter into the fourth step and they start writing a little bit, and what do they experience? Some discomfort, right? I don't really want to look at this. I don't want to really see all these things about myself. And so what do they experience? Resistance and pain, right? Well, what does the third step prayer say? Make me go away. The most convincing way to make me go away is for me to experience pain so that I don't want to be that way. And what a lot of people do is they stop and they turn around. And they don't finish. And then they usually end up drunk or high. The people that persevere through the pain and the discomfort experience something on the other side, this wall of fire that's in front of them that, because it's a wall of fire, you don't know how far it goes. When they actually jump into it, what they realize is it's only like this wide. But they never went through the wall of fire to find out. But all these other people have been through the wall of fire and they're not burned to death. Yeah, but I'll burn to death if I look at that stuff. Why did nobody else? Because we have these preconceived ideas in our head of what we think the results of what we've never done will look like. I know what it's like to jump out of an airplane that I've never jumped out of. So the discomfort in the fourth step is the result of the third step prayer. So I tell my guys to pray their way into inventory and pray their way out. God, please show me the truth. Real simple. When they're done writing for the day, God, please keep me safe and protected until I sit back down. Should I do it on my knees? I don't care. Say the prayer. Open it, close it. What'd you want to do here?
I was listening to my sponsor about 2 months ago. He was doing a workshop I was at, and I think he stole what I'm about to share with you from someone else, but it sounded really good and I really made sense. Brandon read the Dismount Your Donkey, and it talked about all the doctrines, and we're all on this journey of ultimately liberation is what we want, liberation from our ego. And we're traveling this treacherous mountain, trying to get to the vista and stare off at the vista at the summit. Let's equate this vista or summit to the city of Las Vegas. Now, not the Sin City aspect of Las Vegas, because there's a lot of that. When I say Las Vegas, I mean the beautiful, bright lights, the really cool looking architecture, knowing you've entered a state of sensory overload because there's so much going on, you're just like awestruck and you're like, oh, wow, what is this? And that's what spiritual awakening can be like, right? I have been guilty at many times in my sobriety and my recovery of wanting to, I want to give the people around me my version of Vegas. That's not what we're supposed to do here in Alcoholics Anonymous and Cocaine Anonymous. What we do is we give people a roadmap to Vegas. And then when you get to Vegas, you have your own experience with it. And that's what we're here to do. We're describing the mechanical process by sharing our own experience so you can get on the road that is less traveled, by the way, and go to Vegas and have your own experience with it. But I think there are a lot of us here that are guilty of sometimes because we discover something that we think is so true and so powerful that we want everyone to share it the same way we have. And that truth is a relative thing, believe it or not. There is an absolute truth, but like Brandon said, you can convince yourself that something's true about Brandon and it will be true for you. It'll have nothing to do with Brandon, but it'll be true for you. So let's talk a little bit about this choice that we talked about in the second step. I want to backtrack for a second. The ego, we're going to call the sly trickster. The power-driven part within our human makeup, which undermines the process of the quest to seek God in endless cunning ways. Because the object of the quest always transcends the ego, while the ego, by definition, is self-centered. The point at which the sincere traveler encounters the full consequence of this vicious circle becomes a turning point. When he comes face to face with the impossibility of extracting himself from the ego, he becomes constricted or constrained. I don't like imagining that. I cannot defeat my ego, but we can't. There's a point of no return. Here the spiritual traveler, with clarity, but also with a sense of confusion and disillusionment, senses that it is impossible to attain the object of his quest, which is this deep and meaningful relationship with God. Though a sincere desire it is, you can't do it by just will it and effort. You can't will it and just tremendous effort your way to it. Disillusionment, bewilderment, and true humility replace the conceited inflation of spiritual pride. When he sees the futility of his efforts, he recognizes his human limitation. And maybe he's come to know himself a little bit better. This knowledge can never be attained through dogma, through creed, or moralistic preaching, only through personal and real experience. Spiritual traditions can be unequivocal. Only at this point can man come to know his true position in the grand scheme of things. He is a slave to God. His human nature in relationship to God could be slavehood. With the same breath, man realizes God's sovereignty. He or she who knows himself knows God. The only choice that remains for us now is whose slave we choose to be, God or our ego. Maybe there is a choice. Maybe not. I think the most beautiful part of this is I can read books like this that make me question a lot of stuff and leave me really confused and baffled and bewildered, and I'm okay with it. I'm okay with it. I'm okay with the paradoxes. And again, like I've said a few times last night and I've said this morning, my goal here is just to get you to open up and be excited. Because the more excited you are about the possibility, the greater the likelihood of you even engaging this process and staying. But if you don't see any excitement in it, you're not going to stay. You're not going to stay. Let's see here. All right. I think we're done until 2:30.
Kyle, are we doing lunch too?
Yes, sir.
All right. Call me ready. Okay, guys.